Buenas tardes. Good afternoon. Thank you for staying. I was going to say today bitter end, but this is not bitter. I'm going to take you to Peru. There are some good things to say about a very serious situation there, but with progress and hope. So, this project, this presentation is about a project done by a partnership between St. Louis University, School of Public Health, and faith-based communities in central Peru. The environmental assessment that we did together was designed and implemented with one thing in mind, those directly affected by contamination and those who could change the situation, policy change. So briefly, I will give you background of this part of Peru, the central Andes of Peru, and then I will give you some details on the environmental assessment we did. I'm not interested in all the numbers, all the data, but just the essential results to show how important this partnership was and still is for research and policy change. Peru is a country that is very proud of its mining past and present. If you have the chance to go to the Denver Art Museum, you will see beautiful pieces of gold and silver and bronze done by pre-Columbian cultures in Peru. So that the history of mining and metallurgy goes back for thousands of years in Peru. Once Peru became an independent country, mining was and still is an important source of revenue. And foreign companies and some local companies too became key players in the economic scene and the political scene, such as Cerro de Pasco, an American company that operated the largest mining and smelting operation in Peru in the city of La Roya that you are about to see, and stayed there in the country until 1974. So the map shows the various mining operations all over the country, a middle-income Latin American country of about 6,000 GDP. Still, you've heard about the data on inequalities. Yes, Peru is also very unequal in its distribution of health. La Roya, the city you're going to see and hear about, is proud of its being called the mining capital of Peru, high in the Andes, of over 10,000 feet. About 34,000 people live there. And it's a poor city, except for those who work for the mining and metallurgy industry. This is the main concern, the source of the contamination not only in the city, but also in the whole region. I mentioned Cerro de Pasco, the company built this smelter in 1922, and it operated it until 1974 when the smelter was nationalized by a left-wing nationalistic government in Peru. And then, as political winds changed, it was sold back to this company based in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, you can begin to see the connections now, global health connections, between St. Louis, where we are, and this company. In 1997, St. Louis bought the smelter to expand its operations. Doran Peru produces pure gold, silver, lead, and copper for exportation. Although they provide jobs to the local people in La Roya and revenue to the country, from our perspective, there's this other perspective. They are a main source of contamination, tons in the hundreds and even thousands of contaminants that are emitted into the air. I'm giving you some data from the Peruvian Environmental Agency from 2002 to give you an idea of how serious this is. All this 24/7 operation emits all these contaminants that fall over the city and then on the surrounding region. So how did we get involved? Well, what it's not shown here is that, perhaps you don't know this, but Missouri is the largest lead producer in the USA, and the USA is still one of the main producers of lead in the world. So we have our own mining history, and of course the mining legacy problems with health and contamination that we're dealing with in St. Louis and in surrounding now Superfund areas in Missouri. So we've done some research, we had experience, but Peru, I've never been to La Arroyo myself until they came to St. Louis and say, we have a smelter, we are the people from La Arroyo, we need help. We don't trust the government because it's not responsive to us. We don't trust this company. Can we get an independent scientific study done? We can. Yes, we can. With one thing, though, with one caveat, these are poor communities, they say, but we have no money. You know, this is a Jesuit university. We should be able to do this for you. We did it. So what did they want? At the invitation of these faith-based communities, the Catholic Church and these communities in Arroyo, we decided, we put together a partnership that at their request had to be responsive to their culture and their needs. Also, they wanted ethical integrity because of the mistrust that exists in Peru. They wanted to trust the data and the researchers. And also, they wanted to make sure that this does not end without some scientific paper in English. They said, we want to know the results. And those who make decisions that affects us, they need to know these results. So dissemination and translation was key from the beginning. And overall, the goal was to generate evidence that can be useful for program and policy change. So the first step, the big step, was to do a study on exposure. The key question there, we know we have this smelter in the midst of our city. We know we're breathing and eating all this. But we don't know what we have in our bodies. That was the research question. What are the levels of toxic metals in our bodies? So we measured we did a study in 2004, 2005. We sampled over 300 people in two towns, and we sent these results to the CDC in Atlanta. And we went back immediately to the community back in December, almost, it's going to be 5 years, unbelievable, that we went back to Peru and we went to one of these communities, including the capital city of Lima. I delivered the results to the Ministry of Health first, so that they would know what we were going to talk about before they hear it in the press and from the community. And we showed that the blood levels were extremely elevated, three times, four times, five times the CDC level of concern, which you may know it's 10% micrograms per deciliter, extremely high levels that we don't see in the USA anymore. Arsenic and cadmium were also elevated. We used to compress on with some our standards. So we said there is a crisis. So the next question was well, what's happening in the region too? So this is the entire watershed is very important for Peruvians. 700,000 people live there. And we put together a partnership to do the environmental assessment, air, water, and soil. And we did our sampling with 4 p.m., 10 p.m., 2.5, SO2. We did some passive monitoring too because the area is so big, and meteorologic indicators as well. And we found, just give you an example of SO2, that the levels of SO2 are much, much, much higher than what is recommended by WHO, or the new level of concern of 75 ppb for us in the USA. We also went to 553 sampling areas in the whole Mantaro watershed area, and we tested water with our teams, local teams, and we show coliforms because water is not treated. It was very high in near cities and towns. You can see there in the picture of La Arroyo, used water going directly into the river. And we also showed then all the sampling points and the elevations of, in this case, arsenic in water using the Peruvian standards and international standards. The same for cadmium. Extremely elevated levels in some places, and also for lead, which was one of the concerns. water is used for irrigation. We found high levels too, and the concern was that since this is an agricultural area, now what's happening with the food they grow? So high levels of the heavy metals were found in the water. And also we did some soil sampling in 70 sites too, using the XRF that you might know about, tested for a number of metals. And this time the chart was not even big enough to show how elevated the historical contamination of arsenic, cadmium, lead. Well, as I said, we would need a bigger chart to show how elevated in the whole area associated with mining operations. So we presented the soil conclusions to everyone as well. For what? Very few times you have the opportunity to go from what we would like to do, to go from discovery research to translation and dissemination to change. This was one of those opportunities. So we did a community education, capacity building. So now people are more aware of what's going on. They can connect the dots between environment and health, and they can now ask their decision makers for action about this. Now they're asking why the regulations are more protective in the USA. This is our smelter and the La Roya smelter. Why is so? And being this about justice, they began to say, well, this is data now that we can use to seek justice. This is a lawsuit that the La Roya citizens brought against the Peruvian government, which is ongoing. And all in all, to do one thing, and this is the partnership, to say that this is health, as you know, it's not just the absence of disease. Everyone in La Roya too, and in Peru and so many, all over the world, everyone deserves the complete state of physical, mental, and social well-being. And that is our work with this partnership. Thank you. Well, that was quite a run there.
There have been many NGOs and other activists around the world who have basically heard about the situation and tried to call the attention of activists. I was trying to get activists in occupational health to pay attention. And this was several years ago. But so it's actually fantastic to see that there is movement there.
We responded. Yes. We were there. We're still there.
So questions?
Yes.
Sure. This was truly a grassroots effort, and we had, though, a very powerful partner there. So we were faced with a situation of an American university, St. Louis University, in Peru, who are not Peruvians, and government officials that were just not responsive to the emergency, and a powerful company that from the beginning said, we don't want this study. My teams were attacked physically and verbally. Leaflets were left in people's homes saying, do not, the vampires from Missouri and St. Louis University are coming to suck the blood of your children. Do not participate in this study. So it was, this is the reality of global health when you have these powers. But there was another power on our side, the Catholic Church. So Monsignor Barreto in La Roya says, wait a minute. This is about my people, and this is about God's creation. I want this study. So the bully pulpit, I guess we could say that, in La Roya was used to rally all the local communities to say, this is good. We should be part of this because this is the evidence we need to present to everyone that it's not in our minds. This is a real serious situation. So all the community organizations were there, and another national, now international groups began to join in. And there are networks that we work in San Luis and from all over the place. We call them the Friends of La Roya Network now. So that's how it happened.
Thank you. have the general question.
Right now, one of the things that kind of goes along with this is the not so new, but current identification of metals in Afghanistan. And the idea that we're going to be installing lots of smelters, both British and American there. What kind of ideas from your work right now in Oodo would go into that and help set up a system so that we do not see these problems, these health concerns?
Right. I would emphasize again the role of this partnership, because we have the knowledge. And when we presented these results and the evidence and all the data that supports it, they said, how come we didn't know all these things? We've lived with this. So the partnership can be a very powerful tool to bring together knowledge and to channel it into action if you have the right partners, that is. So I would advocate for this partnership that bring expertise. But it's a two-way street. They have concerns, they have questions too, that we can use to generate even more evidence. So the partnerships between researchers and academic institutions and community-based organizations in all these countries, oh boy, we could make a lot of difference.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
So this has been a terrific series of presentations, I think you will agree. We do have some time to open it up. If you remember, we started out with the scavenger community in Patarrat. Any remaining questions on that? There were several hands raised after the Justa Stove presentation in Honduras. Open for that. Dr. Jamieton on environmental indexing. Urbanization and social justice from PAHO, and our final speaker, Dr. Serrano. So the field is yours. Yes. Yeah, please.
Could you just explain the technology, what fuel is used, and a little bit more about the Houston stoves?
Can you come up here to answer?
So by the question, do you mean what materials are used to generate the heat in the stove? Basically, wood is the primary source that they use, but they'll also throw in any raw materials that are around, like grass or, I don't know if you guys can think, leaves,
yeah.
Anything like that. Mm-hmm.
There's a landfill that's nearby the community that they can have access to, too. So.
Right. It's primarily a wood-burning stove. However, these other items can be used to heat.
So, how is it generating much?
It's not that it generates fewer emissions into the air. It's that's not captured within the homes anymore. So it's filtered out of the homes. So the people who are within are no longer exposed to it at a very serious level. Yeah, and that's. Mm-hmm. There's a ceramic combustion kind of cylinder in there that just makes for a higher heat level. Yeah.
The woman with the long hair.
Yeah, I was wondering what was the cost for household to install the stoves, and what implications on the cost for the feasibility of more widespread implementation?
Can you repeat that? I didn't catch all of it. Sorry.
The cost. Mm-hmm. How much did it cost? Mm-hmm.
Well, as we said, the project was done very much through the help of local leaders. And so the stove was designed by a local leader, Reverend Israel, who is in one of our photos. The cost to put them together was approximately $75 to $100 per stove. And so that is an expensive cost, especially in comparison to the fact that most of the residents before that would just build their own stoves out of whatever materials were available to them. However, all local craftsmen were used to make them, and the design itself was put together by Reverend Israel. And so it does have self-sustainability in that it's something that the local residents can make and learn how to make. It's just that for us to do it for this study, we paid for it.
Well, I was just going to add that, yeah, teaching the local residents how to build these stoves, or the communities all over the central mountainous Honduran region, is definitely another part of this, because all of the materials that they need to use to make these stoves can be found locally, and you know, teaching these people how to build these stoves could be another source of income, or you know, just for their own commerce. As far as our project was concerned, the Indiana University School of Medicine, Family Medicine Department, takes a trip down to Honduras every year, and they do want to implement this project as far as we did the project community by community in the other communities that they visit as well.
Okay, thanks. There was a question right in the middle, and then Eckhart. You?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Well, yeah, and some people that, you know, we were opening this intervention up to were kind of against these stoves at first because they didn't want to change what they were used to using. I guess really working with the community leaders and telling them, and I guess having them understand, you know, the importance of the new stoves, and that these stoves are able to be used in a similar means as the other stoves. They're, you know, able to throw their tortillas on the flat iron top of the stove, and that they'll be used in the same way. Because the people that didn't want to have the new stoves were worried that, you know, the stove would be different, they wouldn't be able to cook the things that they were used to doing, and that it'd be totally different. Do you have anything to add to
that?
Yeah,
I just want to add really quickly. What we rely on a lot is kind of the diffusion of innovations theory, that when we're down there, we can only do so much and we have so much manpower. But like Matt said and Lauren mentioned too, we really just want to connect with the community leaders. And not just Reverend Israel, but as we saw Don Rigoberto as well, he's very influential in that community. So just to touch base with them and really give them the power to be able to motivate other people in the community to do that. So we really just relied kind of on that theory.
The leaders help us achieve buy-in, basically. Yeah.
Thank you.
Edward? Thank you. That was an interesting, neat little study. How would you modify? I'm assuming that this was in a lowlands or warmer climate, so heating was not an issue. If you would repeat such a study in the highlands, where heating becomes an issue, especially during the cold season, how would you change the study? Where maybe by evacuating the exhaust, you are losing a lot of heat for heating the house. And how would residents react to those changes in those areas?
Well, actually, one of the more interesting discoveries that we had with our stove is that the residents did feel like it was the Justa stove generated more heat quicker than the former stove. However, if we were to move into an area where temperature was more of a pressing issue, I would think we'd kind of have to reconceptualize how we went about the project. As it was, we could just kind of replace one with the other and pick it up right away. But if it's something like people need heat to stay warm, to stay alive, then there seems like there might have to be more of a transition process built into the study in order to make it something that wouldn't negatively impact their lives to conduct, if that makes sense. Yeah, thanks.
Other questions for the Justa Stove Project or any other?
Well, we were self-funded, but the Indiana University School of Public Health, or Department of Public Health and Department of Family Medicine, is where Dr. Sevilla comes from, and so he works with the university, and so they help fund a lot of that. There's a medical brigade of students who goes down every year, who I think are maybe partially funded by the school, but also students pay for themselves a lot. So it's a lot of just us, people who have a passion for these issues, paying to go down there and do work. But I know that Dr. Sevilla has a foundation that he has where he goes after grants. I don't think he's got anything big yet, but he's still trying.
But, I guess resources for the environmental testing were definitely donated by the Environmental Health Department of Indiana.
Local state agencies.
And local state agencies, yeah, and training and hospital. Just at most of it was just donations.
There were a lot of partnerships.
So Fatima, last question. Since you are going to the country every year and you intervene on air quality, have you looked at how to address the community health issue, expanded to modern sanitation and hygiene? A little bit more comprehensive.
Take that on.
Well, we actually just went down 1 year. Dr. Sevilla has a brigade that goes down every year. He's really the champion of this project. And what he's done is, slowly yet surely, he's building a community health clinic that is more accessible to people who are up in the mountains. A lot of times medical brigades will come in and say, oh, hey, you need to go get this procedure done, but then it's like, well, these people live at the top of a mountain, they can't really walk there, so just getting a diagnosis isn't very helpful to them. And so he's trying to build that clinic so it's more accessible and do something a little bit more comprehensive in that fashion. I don't know that he's really touched on water sanitation, those kinds of environmental issues, although I wouldn't be surprised if he has. I just haven't been aware of that, if he has.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well,
I think we'll close it down just so you have a time to break before the next session. Let's have one more round of applause for these panelists. Very interesting group of interesting and provocative presentations. And even though some of these situations will continue to be challenging for many years, such as Patarat in Romania, the La Roya situation, I actually think we can leave with a certain level of optimism that there are committed people who are actually going to stay the course with these communities over time. So with that, I encourage you to ask any outstanding questions and to connect with our speakers after the session. Thanks again.